This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by Panorama and then our feature of Echo of the African Synod. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to Millennium Appointment. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. As we might already know, Pope Francis was on Sunday afternoon discharged from Rome's Gemelli Hospital, where for close to 1.5 months was treated for double pneumonia. It was a dream come true for most of the Catholic faithful and all the people of goodwill that have prayed and still continue to pray for the health of the Holy Father. Those in Rome, and especially those that had daily camped at Gemelli Hospital, witnessed firsthand the Holy Father's last moments at the hospital before taking the extraordinary journey back to his Santa Marta residence at the Vatican. The Catholic Church, and indeed the entire world of the people of goodwill, has sighed with relief to see Pope Francis discharged from hospital in relatively good health and back to the Vatican. Our editorial director at Vatican Radio, Andrea Tonielli, has in his editorial for Monday summarized the joy of this wonderful experience. The voice appended to Tonielli's editorial in the following report is of our own Francesca Mello.
39 days have gone by since the 14th of February when Pope Francis left the Vatican to be hospitalized at the Gemelli Polyclinic Hospital. These weeks have been challenging for an 88-year-old patient battling bilateral pneumonia. Medical reports did not downplay the severity of his condition, the crises he endured, or the complexity of his clinical picture. Yet throughout this time, he was surrounded by an outpouring of prayers for his recovery. Personal prayers, the prayers of communities, rosaries, and Eucharistic celebrations. They came not only from Catholics and Christians, but also from people of other faiths and those without religious beliefs who sent him good thoughts and well wishes. It was for all these people in prayer that Sunday's brief greeting was wanted and shared. During these long days of suffering, we accompanied the Bishop of Rome in spirit. We waited, prayed, and were moved when on the 6th of March, Pope Francis, with his frail voice, reached out to the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square and those connected worldwide, thanking them for their prayers. We were reassured on the evening of Sunday, the 16th of March, when for the first time we saw him again, albeit filmed from behind, while he prayed after concelebrating Mass in the chapel on the hospital's 10th floor. After weeks of concern, but also of trust and surrender to the will of He who grants us life and may call us to Himself at any moment, Sunday we saw Him again. On the day of His return to the Vatican, we received His blessing again. From His hospital room, Pope Francis has reminded us that every moment of life is precious and that at any time it may be asked of us. He has shown us that suffering and weakness can become opportunities for evangelical witness, a testament to a God who became man, suffered with us, and accepted annihilation on the cross. We thank him for sharing from his hospital room that war seemed even more absurd to him, for reminding us of the need to disarm the world rather than rearm it by stuffing arsenals with new instruments of death, and for praying and offering his suffering for peace, which remains so fragile today. Welcome home, Holy Father.
The Holy See Press Office on Monday held a press conference to present a Vatican-organized summit on longevity. The conference was actually scheduled to take place the same day on Monday under the theme Challenging the Passing of Time. Organized by the Pontifical Council for Life, the meeting took place in the afternoon at the conference center of the Augustinian Fathers, just a stone's throw away from the Vatican. Speaking at the conference, the president of the Pontifical Academy for Life, Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia, said that the Pontifical Academy for Life has decided to sponsor this important international event because the topic of aging touches on the quality of old age, which in itself is a litmus test of the degree of civilization of a nation. He went on to explain the fact that longevity should not be seen simply as a biological goal, but as an opportunity to enhance the elderly in the social context. The elderly are not a burden on society, but a valuable resource, he said, adding that their experience and wisdom represent an irreplaceable cultural and human heritage. He quoted Pope Francis, whom he said often reminds us that a people that does not cherish the elderly is a people without a future, thus emphasizing the need to promote a culture that recognizes the value of old age and counteracts the marginalization of the elderly. In this context, Archbishop Palla said further that equitable access to scientific discoveries becomes a central issue. Biomedical innovations, he said, should not be the privilege of the few, but tools to improve quality of life for everyone, regardless of socioeconomic status. The goal is not just to live longer, but to live better, preventing degenerative diseases and ensuring that everyone has the opportunity for healthy and dignified aging. He concluded by saying that longevity is then not just a matter of science, but of justice, solidarity, and collective responsibility. Church leaders in Zambia have denounced what they have termed as unpalatable remarks against faith leaders, whom they say tried to remind the government of the Southern African nation on various misdeeds that include unfair distribution of resources and poor infrastructure. In a March 19 statement, the church leaders, who include representatives of the Zambia Conference of Catholic Bishops, ZCCB, the Council of Churches in Zambia, CCZ, and the Evangelical Fellowship of Zambia, EFZ, emphasize the role of the church as a voice of the voiceless. The faith leaders only provide checks and balances, and we strongly object to the demeaning language used against church leaders, they say, adding that they believe it is essential to uphold the dignity of all people, regardless of their role in society. The Auxiliary Bishop of Zambia's Chipata Catholic Diocese, Bishop Gabriel Msipupiri, has reportedly been at the center of tensions with the country's ruling United Party for National Development, UPND, for being vocal about governance gaps. Bishop Piri has criticized President Hage Ndehijirema's government for failing to realize promises, particularly regarding the rehabilitation of roads in the eastern province of the country. In his criticism, Bishop Piri is said to have, for example, expressed concern about the delays in fertilizer distribution, noting the fact that agriculture is the primary livelihood in the region and that such a setback adversely affects farmers' welfare. Reacting to the criticisms, Chief Government Spokesperson Cornelius Mwetwa threatened Bishop Piri. In his March 4 press release, Mwetwa said that the Zambian government was going to isolate him and deal with him in person for challenging the government. But in their March 19 statement, the church leaders in Zambia say they have a duty to speak to the moral conscience of the nation, a task that they say are committed to do, informed by their scriptures and not coercion by any other forces. The three church mother bodies have explained the fact that they have consistently and actively spoken on matters of public and national interest without rushing to comment on issues, that they do this as they strive to ensure that their messages are informed, thoughtful, and balanced. The bishops of Nigeria recently concluded their first plenary session of 2025 with a visit to the president of Nigeria in Abuja, where the Catholic Church leaders brought to the attention of President Bola Ahmed Tinubu the role played by mission schools among the people of Nigeria and the need to help improve the education sector at large. Josephine Atsu has this report.
The Catholic Church in Nigeria has always had a focused intervention on education. This is evident in records showing that the church has established approximately 649 elementary schools, 384 secondary schools, and 16 tertiary institutions across the country. The address presented at the State House by the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Nigeria during a courtesy call on the President of the Federation captured the need for collaboration to foster standard and affordable education in Nigeria.
Mr. President, during our interaction 2 years ago, we raised serious concerns, one of which is on education, particularly the fate of mission schools taken over by the military. You shared how, as governor of Lagos State, you implemented their return. we urge you to extend this initiative nationwide and establish a committee to enhance collaboration in the education sector, especially at the foundational level.
In Abuja, Nigeria, Delphine Asu, reporting.
You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The head of the UNAIDS agency has warned that there could be 2,000 new HIV infections a day across the world and a tenfold increase in related deaths if funding frozen by the United States is not restored or replaced. Winnie Byanyima, the executive director of UNAIDS, told reporters in Geneva on Monday that if funding from USAID did not resume at the end of the 90-day pause or was not replaced by another government, there will be in the next 4 years an additional 6.3 million AIDS-related deaths. President Donald Trump put almost all U.S. foreign aid on hold upon taking office on the 20th of January. Days later, the U.S. State Department said life-saving HIV work under the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, known as PEPFAR, will continue, but the disruption to health funding and the impact on broader services were having a devastating impact on people living with HIV and AIDS, Ms. Byanyima said. In an interview with Vatican Media shortly after the announcement by the U.S. President, Caritas Internationalis Secretary General Alistair Dutton expressed grave concern over the sudden closure of USAID-funded programs. Mr. Dutton said the cutting off of essential humanitarian aid puts many millions of lives at risk, especially since alternative funding in emergency plans may not be possible in time to save lives. Reports from Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo say a ceasefire there is in trouble as rebels continue to hold on to a strategic town. The de facto ceasefire between Congolese forces and the Rwandan-backed rebels in the town of Walikale broke down on Monday, with the rebels going back on a pledge to withdraw and accusing the army of violating its own commitments. The prospects of a ceasefire in the strategic town, which the M23 rebels captured last week, had briefly failed hopes of reviving stalled diplomatic efforts to resolve Eastern DRC's biggest conflict in decades. Laurent Kanyuka, the spokesperson for M23's Congo River Alliance Rebel Coalition, accused the army and allied militias of not withdrawing their attack drones from Walikale. Attempts to bring the government of the DRC and the rebels to the negotiating table have repeatedly failed. Kenya has applied for a new loan program from the International Monetary Fund that will factor in unused money from the current program, which both sides walked away from last week, Finance Minister John Mbadi said on Monday. The East African nation and the IMF agreed last week to ditch the ninth and final review of the current program, which was set to expire next month, sending Kenya's dollar bonds lower. Mr. Mbadi said the decision to stop the review was due to time limitations and denied reports that Kenya had fallen out with the IMF over the government's failure to meet some of the targets set in the current program. There was roughly $800 million left on the table from the program that had started in April 2021, Mr. Mbadi said. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. As you may have heard earlier, the members of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Nigeria recently concluded their first plenary session for 2025 with a visit to the country's president, Bola Ahmed Tinubu. The bishops of Nigeria meet as a conference twice a year, usually in the first week of Lent and then in August or September. During the session that ended last week, the bishops deliberated on important issues regarding the evangelizing mission of the church in Nigeria as well as issues regarding the promotion of human dignity, human rights, justice, reconciliation, peace and development in the wider society. During the visit to President Tinubu, the chairman of the conference, Archbishop of Owerri, Most Reverend Lucius Ugoji, highlighted some of the challenges facing Africa's most populous nation. Delphine Asu reports.
The visit to the State House presented an opportunity for the Catholic bishops to discuss pressing issues of national interest with Mr. President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, the president of the organization. Most Reverend Lucius Ugoji, in his address, highlighted the harsh economic situation and other difficulties the people are facing in the nation.
The removal of fuel subsidy in particular has caused considerable hardship. We also take note of your initiative in the tax reforms, which in the long run, we hope, will generate more resources for advancing the common good. Sir, you are more aware than we are of the grave threat that insecurity poses to our nation. To ensure greater efficiency and accountability, we propose that public funds be redirected towards pressing national needs. We appeal to Your Excellency to direct the Ministers of Education and Health to ensure equitable access to land for places of worship for both Christians and Muslims across the country without delay.
His Excellency, President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, responded with a call on citizens to invest and make sacrifices for sustainable development.
Citizens should be by investment, and this is what you are preaching. Yes, the fuel subsidy was hard, tough for me, but it's a hard choice that Nigeria must face if we are not going to bankrupt our country, force disintegration and indebtedness for the future of our children yet unborn. We were spending their investment. We are spending their rights. And poverty has no religious basis. It has no religious coloration, no identity. It affects all, and we must fight it together. We have to be more dedicated as citizens. We have to invest in ourselves. I'm glad you mentioned the tax reform. That's part of the investment opportunity. Citizens must be able to build their nation. This insecurity, everyone is affected, Christian, Muslim, alike.
He finally spoke on the progress recently recorded and appreciated the prelates for their prayers and support.
If you see competition among the petroleum sellers, Dangote and others in pricing, if you are seeing the prices of foodstuff going down, majority of the farmers are paying their wages because they have bounty harvest and they are making economic gains from the harvest. Glory be to God and congratulations on the Lent. I wish
Thank you.
Continue to pray for the country. We pray this Ramadan will be a successful one.
Amen.
The economy has turned around, and the certainty of investment is there. People are coming in to invest.
In Abuja, Nigeria, Delphine Asu, reporting.
The members of the Leadership Conference of Consecrated Life in Southern Africa, the LCCLSA, have elected Sister Zelna Ostuzen of the Good Shepherd Sisters as president of the association and married brother John Buanali as vice president. The two were elected during the just-ended annual general meeting of the organization, which took place at Lumko Institute in Benoni, South Africa. In an interview with her colleague, Shola Purish, Sister Otutsen emphasized the need for renewal and collaboration among religious congregations.
As the new leadership of the LCCLSA, what is your vision?
The vision I have from the discussions that we've had over these past few days is really to find ways how we as consecrated people can really support each other and also work together to fulfill the common mission. We all have so much to give from different charisms and our legacies, and it's almost like the Lord is saying in the Jubilee year, let's start again, let's renew ourselves and walk the path together. I think for me, the experience of yesterday, where we were able to go through the whole title of being Pilgrims of Hope, journey together. It really, the sense I felt in the group was that we needed the space where we could just be ourselves and share our stories. And that was really a sign of hope, so much so that it came to the conclusion that we need to start again the peer groups where we support each other as leaders. And that's something strong, because I think as leaders, if we are supported, we can be our best for our members.
Seriously, I will underline what she has mentioned about working together. It has shown in the past that this spirit needs to be encouraged. And many of our activities, if we are doing together, it's easy to even show the results of the work that we are doing. And in the world where vocations are diminishing, young people coming to join religious life, let's show that through our working together as congregations in LCCL South Africa.
That was the newly elected vice president of the Leadership Conference of Consecrated Life in Southern Africa, Marist Brother John Buanali. Before him, you heard from the new president of the organization, Sister Zelna Otutsian of the Good Shepherd Sisters. And that's all for this edition. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You are welcome to this week's edition of Millennium Appointment. Fighting between M23 rebels and Congolese government troops and their Wazalendo militia and Burundi government troop allies has displaced hundreds of thousands of people in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Over 100,000 have crossed into neighboring Rwanda, Burundi, and Uganda, and include civilians and fighters who have deserted the Congolese government army. Burundi in particular has received more of the displaced people who are arriving on a daily basis through unofficial border crossings. The United Nations High Commission for Refugees has been working with the government of Burundi to receive the refugees. It is receiving and registering them at a stadium known as Rugombo, which is located a few kilometers from the border of the Democratic Republic of Congo. After registration, the refugees are relocated to sites away from the border. Before the conflict started, Rwanda was already hosting more than 100,000 Congolese refugees, many of them Banyamulenge, who had escaped attacks launched against their communities by Congolese government troops and their allied militias. Faith Kasina is the head of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees Africa Region. From Bujumbura, she explained the situation.
It's a very dire humanitarian situation. Thousands of people crammed up in a local stadium generously given by the government of Burundi because that was the only available space for people to shelter before they moved on to the designated refugee sites away from the border. But this is a very small space compared to the number of people who've already arrived. And those who continue coming, there's not enough space to put additional shelter. People now are forced to look for alternative space outside the stadium, so open fields in neighboring communities where they can put up the tents and they can shelter until they're able to move to the refugee sites.
The arriving refugees, who include unaccompanied children, narrate distressing stories of dangerous day and night journeys and crossing of rivers infested with crocodiles. Some report acts of violence, including rape and robbery against them by armed groups, especially by members of the Wazalendo militia group. Mrs. Kasina enumerated the urgent needs.
Water is a problem, not enough for everyone. There's a local food kitchen within the stadium that's making porridge for young children twice a day. There is food that's being cooked. Again, these are resources that are being constantly stretched because of the dire situation, the sheer number of arrivals, who are people who are already there, and more that are expected to come.
Mrs. Kasina expressed thanks to the local Burundians who are generously helping Congolese refugees either by sheltering them or by providing them with food and other basics.
We are seeing local people, Burundians themselves, opening their homes, taking in people, sharing the little resources that they have, shelter and food and water, just because of the situation they see their fellow brothers and sisters caught up in.
The United Nations High Commission for Refugees has set up a protection desk to provide critical psychosocial support and to assist in identifying specific needs among the new arrivals, especially unaccompanied children, survivors of sexual violence, the elderly, and people with serious medical conditions. Mrs. Kasina told reporters last week in Burundi's capital Bujumbura that her regional office is lacking sufficient funds to help the ever-growing number of refugees, especially in ensuring the provision of food and water, medical care, adequate sanitation facilities, and waste management, which pose risks for disease outbreaks. She made the following appeal.
Our mandate is essentially ensuring that anyone who crosses a border in search of safety, in search of assistance, is able to access it. So any assistance that we can get at the regional level, at the country level, in Burundi, in the DRC, any support we can get that will help us reach people safely and in a timely way with the assistance that they need is definitely welcome.
Faith Kasina, the head of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees Africa Region. And that was Millennium Appointment for this week. This has been Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudato Jesus Christus.